When two cousins set sail across the Sea of Cortez, they expect the weather to be blue skies and fair winds all the way. But when an unexpected storm blows in off the mountains, their boat is torn apart and they're dumped in shark-infested waters. Their only refuge is an uninhabited island, where there is no food, no water, and no shelter from the burning sun. All they have left is the will to survive, and the hope that that will be enough on I Shouldn't Be Alive.
It's cold!
Help!
My God! Help me! Climb! Come on!
Baja California is a peninsula at the top of Mexico with a parched yet beautiful landscape. It borders the Sea of Cortez, which is dotted with arid desert islands. The area attracts outdoorsmen and adventurers all year round because of its warm climate. For cousins Mark Sorensen and Rob Rusnak, it's the perfect destination for a sailing adventure. Mark likes to push the envelope when he has free time, living for the adrenaline thrills.
For me, it's that element of the unknown that really provides that spicier side of adventure.
For Rob, an invitation to embark on a four-day trip with his older cousin was an offer he was not going to refuse.
I was really excited. You know, I had all these thoughts of how this was all gonna happen, so it was very exciting.
The cousins have always enjoyed an easygoing relationship. They live near each other in Southern California, just 10 hours drive to the Sea of Cortez. The guys are planning a four-day sail from Bahia de Los Angeles to Bahia Kino with stops at a couple of islands in between. No one's expecting to hear from them for 4 days. It's 160 miles round trip, ambitious in Mark's small 16-foot catamaran, which is not really designed for long sails on the open sea.
Mark loved the idea of doing this crossing in such a small vessel because it was more challenging. If there's a 40-foot jump or a 100-foot jump into a cove, he'll take the 100-foot jump.
Rob's sport is rock climbing, and though he's sailed before, he doesn't have nearly Mark's experience.
Rob did see me as a mentor in terms of teaching him the basics of sailing.
As they pack up the catamaran, Rob is concerned about all the weight they're carrying.
Is baby gonna hold out?
There's too much on it.
What?
Weight.
That doesn't sound good. I mean, you're the sailor, but too much weight on a boat. Boat sinks, right?
Boat won't sink.
Look, let's leave the
wetsuits and the thick clothes. It'll be hot the whole time.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I'm gonna try and spread the weight out a bit, see if it helps.
But the heaviest thing on the boat is something Mark knows they just can't do without. Water.
The kind of adventure that we're often looking for borders between weekend warrior and death wish, and that gray area between those things.
When they set sail, the conditions are ideal.
It was really the perfect time of year. You're at the tail end of any winter storm season, and it's well before any of the summer hurricane or tropical storm season.
It sounds perfect, but that doesn't mean much in the Sea of Cortez. The local geography can help generate violent winds. They can be extremely difficult to predict with little or no warning.
I love sailing because of the sense of freedom of being out on the open water. Once you get going on a catamaran, it's a feeling of like flying. Wow, we're here, you know, this is what we were looking for. It's begun.
After their flying start, Mark senses something's not right with the boat.
You feel that?
What?
The cat. That feels a little awkward.
We could feel the weight on the boat. It was behaving differently than when you don't have that kind of gear on there, but it seemed workable.
Just enjoy the ride. Yeah! I'm gonna fly across the Cortez.
But only 2 hours into the trip, the wind just dies away. They're going nowhere.
Guess I spoke too soon, didn't I?
60 miles an hour to zero like that.
In the dead calm, the heat builds to over 100 degrees.
Watch out for hammerheads.
You mentioned sharks, you didn't mention hammerheads. Weren't hammerheads like the psychopath of the shark world?
Would you be at peace with yourself if you had a head shaped like that?
The Sea of Cortez is not a place to be taken lightly. I had seen a documentary about hundreds of hammerhead sharks moving through this part of the Sea of Cortez. Hammerheads are one of the few species of known man-eaters in the world and are known to be aggressive. This is something we want to keep our eyes open for.
Truth is, hammerheads in the Sea of Cortez don't normally attack humans, but Mark and Rob don't know this. As far as they're concerned, these are killer sharks, and they won't be going in the water anytime soon.
Imagine catching one of those on the end of your line.
3 hours later, as suddenly as it disappeared, the wind returns. But over on the horizon, Mark can see bad news coming their way.
Don't like the look of those clouds. Something's kicking up over there.
Coming out of the north was some kind of a squall or weather front. So we were kind of worried that, wow, what if this is something big rolling through that was not expected and that's going to be here for a while.
The winds from the bottom of a low pressure system over California have been slamming into the ridge of mountains that run down the Baja Peninsula. These hold them back until the pressure rises too far. When that happens, the powerful winds pour over the peaks, hurtling down the eastern side of the mountains. As they rush out into the Sea of Cortez, they head straight for Mark and Rob.
We might have to forget about the crossing and head back.
We might have to. Small savage storms. Squalls. If we get caught in one, we're sitting ducks.
The approaching storm is just the beginning of their problems. The overloaded boat is beginning to show the strain.
I had noticed that the port side pontoon seemed to be getting lower and lower in the water.
I think we got water on the port side pontoon.
Unknown to Mark and Rob, a crack has opened up in one of the catamaran's two hulls. Water is seeping in, weighing that side of the boat down, dangerously destabilizing the catamaran.
We're in the middle of the sea. If that pontoon is taking on water, there's not a darn thing we can do about that, except to get to land as quickly as we possibly can.
I'm sorry, Rob, I'm turning around.
And then, Mark's worst fear is realized.
One big gust of wind, which was probably approaching about 60 or so miles per hour, hit us. The mainsail basically shredded. It tore in a couple different directions.
As the waterlogged hull sinks below the surface, the front digs into the sea, flipping the boat upside down.
We ended up in the water, tangled up in the sheets with tattered sails and rigging everywhere. Absolutely, I was scared. I thought, oh my God, you know, this thing is going to crush my head. And so I thought for sure this boat's going to take my head off.
Rob and Mark are in deep trouble. Adrift in a storm in shark-infested waters on an upturned boat, the 12 miles haul to the mainland might as well be 1,000.
At GNC this Halloween.
Cousins Mark Sorensen and Rob Rusnak are up to their necks in trouble in the Sea of Cortez, and believing their shark bait isn't their only problem.
Is it me or is it now really cold in here?
This time of year, the temperature in the Sea of Cortez is close to 80 degrees. Sounds warm, but with the strong winds blowing over their soaked bodies, wind chill is cooling them fast, sucking the heat out of them.
The waves were just getting huge, and we were getting quite beaten up, and the boat was just slamming up and down constantly.
Let's get the cat back on!
We just knew we needed to get the boat righted as soon as possible.
The guys manage to struggle on board the catamaran, and Mark decides to head back against the storm towards the mainland. But with the damage to the pontoon and the extra weight of the water tank, they just can't keep the boat upright. It just keeps on capsizing.
I think all in all, we capsized around 6 or 7 times.
This wind and the state of the cat, I can't steer toward the mainland. We'll keep capsizing.
We were both getting very cold. I was shivering uncontrollably. I was very uncoordinated.
There's a sort of an internal panic setting in, but you're just trying to think, what are the things I need to do right now?
As a final attempt to gain control of the boat, in desperation, Mark decides to untie the 80-pound water tank to lighten the load. He's gambling that they'll get to shore before they need it. But even this doesn't work. The catamaran is just too damaged to sail, and now their only source of water is gone.
Everything we're doing, everything we're trying is going wrong. And I said, well, what do we do now? Just die?
And when he said that, that brought in basically a flood of emotion where you're going, you know, this could be it. And what a ridiculous way to go.
Their only chance of survival is to get to the nearest island, Guardian Angel. But getting in close will be tough. It's surrounded by rocks.
There's a rule in sailing that as long as you've got something afloat, you stay with it. You don't separate yourself from that.
The shore is just too rocky to land the boat. They have no option but to abandon the catamaran to the boulders and struggle ashore.
Onto the shore was so incredible in terms of just the mental relief of having dry land under your feet. All pain just sort of evaporated for a little while. I think that we definitely cheated death on the water. It was a combination of just good luck and maybe somebody up there looking out for us.
They manage to salvage their dry bags from the boat. Inside are sleeping bags, and they need them desperately. They've been in the water long enough to feel the early effects of hypothermia.
We got in our sleeping bags and got into a fetal position to try to conserve warmth.
We were probably in pretty advanced stages of hypothermia. You're still shivering like crazy, but you know you've got a little cocoon of what will eventually become warmth as your body heats up the damp parts of the sleeping bag.
Rob, are you okay?
But despite his exhausting ordeal, sleep doesn't come easy to Mark.
I saw this very strange light-colored thing that was jumping around on the ground.
Rob, wake up.
I'm awake.
There's something over there.
I'm not opening my eyes.
Look.
I assumed at that point that this was some kind of animal that was kind of circling us and checking out our campsite.
I think it's an animal.
You said it was uninhabited.
I thought it was.
What you doing?
It's jumping up been down.
You're dehydrated. You're hallucinating.
You know, at this point, your mind is playing tricks on you. You're not thinking clearly.
When daybreak finally arrives, the stark reality of the situation sets in.
Wake up, dude. Wake up. The good news is the catamaran's sitting on the beach.
Yeah?
The bad news is it's in a million pieces.
The boat had been entirely pulverized. And we realized, okay, we're stuck here.
They've washed up on one of the most inhospitable places in the world. Guardian Angel Island is over 600 square miles of barren, uninhabited rock. There's little shade and no source of fresh water. It's about as harsh a place to be shipwrecked as anyone could imagine.
You want to try and swim it?
Want to be eaten by a hammerhead?
We could climb out.
Well, this cliff's got to be 100 feet high. You get to the top, there'll be a ridge and then another cliff 100 feet high. It's gonna be over 110 degrees by midday. Without water, you wouldn't make it 50 feet, and then I'd have to watch your dead body fall back to the beach, so no thanks, bud.
We realized we're gonna be on this hot, dry, no water, no food island and situation, and we're gonna have to figure out how we're going to cope with this.
So we're trapped.
Are shipwrecked on a desert island with no food and no water, far from any shipping lanes and 12 miles from the mainland. In their minds, swimming across shark-infested seas would be a death sentence. But Rob believes this is their only way out.
I think we could make it. It might take a day, but we could do it.
We'd never make it. It's got to be 12 miles away. Our splashing would attract the hammerheads and who knows what else. We're weak, dehydrated, and if the sharks don't get you, the current will.
Thoughts of the hammerhead sharks, thoughts of how far that actually was. This was going to be a long swim in potentially shark-infested waters, and was not something that we would probably survive.
Let's build a raft then.
Well, with what? There's no trees, no wood. We're on a desert island, my friend.
I'm gonna try it.
There's nothing to seal the end of it with.
I'm gonna try it.
It won't float. Look, it'll be fine. The fishing boat will be past soon. They'll pick us up, take us back to the car. You'll be home in time for dinner.
Mark takes stock of the few items that were packed in their dry bags.
The only things that we didn't lose in the water were the items that were in our dry bags.
Well, we've got a book, well, half of, a knife, about 20 matches, and some soaking wet cookies.
I think I found that animal that was stalking you last night.
You did?
Yeah, kind of reddish in color. Moved up and down in a strange way.
Yeah. Oh, no. Cinco de Mayo, the 5th of May.
Huh?
Must have blown over from the mainland.
And?
It's a Mexican holiday. It's like Independence Day. It's a national holiday. The last 4 or 5 days, everyone takes part.
Cool.
Even the fishermen. Be on the sea for a few days.
We don't have enough to last, do we?
Rob. Rob!
After we saw that balloon, our spirits basically dipped pretty low. At least mine did. We might be in for a pretty long wait before we saw anybody in our area. It was starting to get to me.
Surviving a long wait in this heat is not on the cards. A few days without water, and they'll be dead. There's none on the island, and they had to cut away their water supply in last night's storm. If they can't get back to the mainland or find a water source, their bodies will begin to shut down from dehydration. They will get delusional and eventually die.
After the sun came up on the island, there was a limited breeze coming through there. So you can just feel the heat, you know, 110, 120 degrees Fahrenheit. And you can just feel this heat getting hotter and hotter all morning long.
The sun was just beating on you all day. There's no shade to be had anywhere. I basically stayed completely closed, but even doing all that, a few parts of my skin that were exposed got burned.
Robin Mark's skin is literally being cooked by the sun. As blood rushes to the skin's surface, it turns red. Then as the skin cells dry out, blisters form over the burned areas, cracking and tearing the skin, drying out their body's precious water reserves, accelerating the process of dehydration.
You know those guys in the movies in the desert going, water, water?
Yeah.
I know how they feel.
But we have to find a few things, otherwise we'll be dead before morning in this heat.
Under these conditions, the human body can barely last a day. If they don't find water soon, Mark and Rob risk being literally cooked alive. Risky decision. Mark Sorensen and Rob Rusnak have gone without fresh water for nearly 2 days. Exposed to the sun and temperatures reaching nearly 100 degrees, their thirst is unbearable.
There really is no way to drink seawater.
And it'll destroy your kidneys and make you go mad.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I'll leave that as a last resort.
What else we got around here? Don't Indians get water from cactus?
The cactus plant has adapted itself perfectly to desert conditions. An extensive system of shallow roots allows it to absorb the little rain that does fall in this arid region. Woody vertical ribs expand and contract like an accordion, transporting water to its fleshy parts.
Wait, aren't cactuses like protected species?
I can remember from being a little kid and watching things on TV, you can cut into a nice thick cactus and find fresh water.
It crossed our mind that, for all we knew, this cactus could be poisonous, but we had no choice at that point. We could die of thirst.
After you.
Tastes like warm bile.
I can't handle this.
No, keep going. This is for the water.
Our tongues were swelling, and it was, you know, very parched throat, and it gets kind of hard to breathe. And this immediately cleared up that.
The taste was just very nasty, bitter, but the moisture was definitely a relief.
As temperatures continue to soar, Mark and Rob know they have got to get out of the sun, but there's almost nowhere to hide.
What little shade there was came from the cactus, which was, you know, yay wide, and you could catch a little bit of shade.
My turn.
I still have more time.
We have to find proper shelter.
There is nothing to work with but scraps of wreckage from the catamaran. Mark and Rob do their best to create a makeshift shelter.
We were able to salvage enough of the boat, the trampoline, as well as the sails and the boom, and we were able to basically make a tent shelter.
But having solved one problem, they find themselves with another.
It would become exceedingly hot during the day if there was no breeze.
As their bodies sweat out precious water to help cool them down, the few drops of bitter cactus juice do little to replace the lost fluid.
And it just became like an oven inside that shelter.
They've now been without water for 36 hours, and their minds and bodies are rapidly deteriorating.
Having spent a full day in the sun, our spirits, I think, were definitely not high. Not seeing anybody, not seeing a boat, it was quite depressing.
You think anyone will see the fire?
Can't hurt. Oh, what I wouldn't give to be able to peel the top layer of my skin off and burn it up.
With nightfall, another form of torture replaces the blazing heat.
Stupid insects are driving me crazy.
Hundreds of minute sandflies feast on Mark and Rob's blood. As they slash the skin and inject saliva into the wound, a pool of blood collects, which they hungrily suck up. The saliva triggers a massive immune response in Mark and Rob, causing unbearable itching. Left untreated, the bites will become infected.
Ow!
Because you can't see them, there's nothing to swat. You know, these things somehow get on you and they're able to bite you, and you don't see them, you don't feel them until it's too late.
I tried to stay in the sleeping bag to avoid the sand flies, but as soon as it got too hot, I'd open the bag and I'd start getting eaten alive by these sand flies. If you fell asleep with the sleeping bag wide open, it was a big mistake.
The night is going to be a long and painful one as the flies gorge on their blood. But this is not their biggest problem. They've had nothing but a few drops of cactus juice to drink in 2 days. Their bodies are running out of fluid. Their blood is thickening. Soon, it will start to affect their minds.
Hello.
After a sleepless night, Rob and Mark's bodies are going downhill fast. All that's keeping them going is their will to live and their sense of humor.
Yeah, they got me too.
The bites were all over our face, necks, ears, anywhere they could get to, they would bite you.
Do you think they're poisonous?
If they were, we'd be dead already.
How do I look?
Buddy? You look great.
You could run your hand up and down your arm. It was just all bumpy up and down. And the welts were, you know, turning red and a bit infected in places. Nothing seemed to be able to really stop them.
Three days under the broiling sun with no water. Dehydration is making them delusional.
Increasingly, when you're dehydrated and your mind is just not working right, the harumphing sound of the waves started to sound like a jet. Even after we knew that to be the case, sometimes you heard that and your head would just go, yeah, but what if this time it really is a jet? The despair really starts to eat on you after a while.
And when a real plane does appear in the sky, the sense of frustration is even more unbearable.
The sight of this plane going by, it drives you crazy. Something emotionally starts to tear you apart. I can't tell those people I'm down here, that I exist, that I'm in trouble.
Get something reflective. We'll try to signal it.
We have nothing that reflects.
The night plane.
That's two doors messed up.
Well, keep having your arms in.
I remember trying to signal, even though I instinctively knew that they were too high, and I'm sure they couldn't see me.
Look. You think he saw us?
I doubt it. They would have circled back around.
Oh,
We saw a few jet airliners going, you know, probably 30,000 feet or above, speeding along, and there's these people out there nice and comfortable in their seats and probably eating peanuts and drinking their martinis and having a good old time while we're down here, you know, wishing that we could somehow signal them. It was one of the many heartbreaking things that we experienced.
As the hours slip by with no let up in the heat, Rob finally reaches his breaking point.
What are you doing?
What does it look like I'm doing? I'm trying to do something. To find out what's at the top of these cliffs.
Rob, you're in the water.
We need to do something, Mark. Anything. And as fun as it is burning to death on this beach eating
cactus...
You'll
be dead before you reach the top.
I didn't know what was on the island or what was back up above those walls. I wanted to do something, just about anything.
Rob, get up!
No.
It'll kill you!
I can do that! Get up!
It was very frustrating for me. You know, it would have been pretty easy for me to climb up these cliffs, being a rock climber.
Please, believe me when I tell you that there's nothing at the top of these cliffs except more cliffs. And maybe a Club Med. With one of those pool bars, you know the type.
But the postal's actually in the water.
I'll get him to send down a couple of margaritas later.
Tell him to go easy on the salt.
It's becoming obvious that the mental challenge of surviving is going to be even harder than the physical one. And it isn't long before dehydration and desperation begin to cloud their judgment again.
I see something. Out on the water.
Is that a kayaker?
Looks like it.
And we could see every once in a while kind of something come up and slap the water. And we're both saying, oh my gosh, you know, is this a kayaker that's coming across the midriff area?
Over here! Hey! That's Swick!
Do you think he's seen us?
I can't tell if he's coming toward us or not.
Hey!
Look, that's Swick!
And as we're watching, this thing turns and starts flapping and rises above the water. And we realize, oh my gosh, this is a pelican we've been watching all this time.
Hey!
It's a pelican.
No, it's a kayak. It's a guy in a kayak. Hey, look!
It's got wings. It's a pelican.
Pelicans don't go kayaking, Mark. It's a guy. It's a guy in a... It's a guy. It's a damn pelican.
Talk about a sinking feeling. You know, we had all this hope that was coming up, and now the hope sort of flew south. And our chances of getting off this island are not looking good.
After 3 days marooned on a desert island, Rob doubts they'll ever make it off alive.
Out of all the ways my life could end, heart attack, car accident, plane crash, I ain't gonna die of thirst on a desert island. How ridiculous is that?
The thoughts of death start to creep in, and for the first time I realize that we could actually die on this island. Will it be Mark that goes first, or will it be me that goes first? Or are we gonna go so delirious and crazy that we kill each other?
I keep picturing our bones lying on the ground like the iguana skeletons all around the canyon. You don't feel that?
Yeah, it enters my mind, but then I push it out. We are going to survive.
What if we're here for 2 weeks or a month?
I really hate that my family now is going to start being concerned that they haven't heard from us.
In that movie, Tom Hanks survived for years on the fish and fruit. How the hell did we end up on an island with tiny half-inch long fish and no plants?
Look, we'll be rescued. I promise.
It would have been devastating, of course, if Rob had come to any serious harm. I would almost rather not have come home myself than to have faced his mother to tell her that I had lost her son.
Mark believes the only chance of survival lies not in their ravaged bodies, but in their minds. He and Rob have to keep each other going and believe they can make it, or it will just turn into a race between dehydration, hunger, and scorching temperatures as to which one kills them first. Days without water, the final stages of dehydration have kicked in.
You okay, amigo?
Sure.
My mind and my vision and even my hearing were playing tricks on me.
You see something out there?
Dehydration was definitely the major culprit in causing delirium and the mind tricks.
Because of the lack of water in his body, Rob's blood is thickening, preventing his heart from pumping at full capacity. Starved of vital oxygen, his brain neurons misfire, and the organized electrical activity that drives his conscious mind collapses. Rob begins to lose his grip on reality.
Seemed to take on a life of their own. It was like I was one of the ants.
Up! Get in here.
I'll be right in.
I didn't know if I was going insane. I didn't know what was going on. It was bizarre and surreal at the time. It almost seems like a dream to me now.
As his body begins to lose its battle with dehydration, Rob sinks into a state of total despair.
I was drained. I was quite delirious. At this point, I knew that I could possibly die.
Rob, sounds like a boat.
Man, it's probably a wave or a pelican or the cactus talking to you or something.
Get up. There's definitely a boat out there.
Hey! Hey!
This way!
Sure enough, there was a boat just a few hundred yards out.
Over here!
And we're thinking, oh my God, this thing is going to keep going. But it didn't. It stopped. And we're going, I think it stopped, you know? This thing is sitting there. The motor started revving again, and it started coming towards us, and we're going, oh my God, this thing's hitting our way. An incredible sense of relief and adrenaline rushed over me that I never felt before.
But their euphoria is short-lived. There is no rush to come in and get them.
Well, why are they stopping? Why aren't they coming to get us?
I don't know.
Hey!
They seem pretty suspicious. Who knows what, you know, who these two gringos could have been.
Let me deal with it.
I'm not fluent in Spanish, but I know enough to get along. and was able to respond to them.
Hey, ¿qué pasó? Oye, estamos aquí por tres días. Mira, mira, el barco choco con rocas. Es verdad. Tres días no agua.
But instead of heading into shore, the boat starts to turn away.
Hello!
It's sunken to me that in that instant they're gonna leave without us. It's devastating.
And we're thinking, oh my God, it's now midway and this thing is gonna keep going.
And then finally, we could tell they were clearly moving towards us.
Gracias! Hey, gracias!
At that point, your mind is just so relieved.
Muchas gracias! Gracias!
Vamos, rápido!
You're now out of that predicament, and it looks like you're going to make it home.
They've been so suspicious that they would just leave us behind. My spirits would have just sank to beyond the depths.
The feeling of having gulps of water actually go down your throat was just incredible.
It was a bizarre feeling to feel your body hydrate almost instantaneously. You can almost feel it pumping out through all of your limbs and all of your veins. It was the best water I've ever swallowed.
Your whole body's just breathing a sigh of relief. Just glad to be alive and glad that we didn't die.
Extreme temperatures, the average person survives no more than 3 days without water. Mark and Rob were rescued on the 4th. When the chips are down, a good sense of humor and the right attitude are some of the most powerful survival tools you'll ever have. Rob is now married and lives with his wife, Danette, in San Diego, and adrenaline-fueled adventures with his cousin are low on the agenda. Mark's passion for sailing continues, but to his wife's relief, he tends to stick to larger boats these days.
When you go through something that is that intense, that establishes a kind of a bond that is different than a family bond. We share this common experience, but I'm not sure that he'd ever go sailing with me again.